Okay, make sure you're in fellowship as we are dissecting Jacob's sons' version of events that happened in their trip to Egypt. As we are seeing in regards to contrasting their words to what was actually recorded in the narrative, they have omitted large segments and they have embellished other aspects in regards to their conversation with the ruler to paint him even more tyrannical and cruel than what he originally manifested towards them. Someone completely and totally unreasonable, etc. Their omission in regards to events, they totally leave out the fact that the original charge or ultimatum given them by the ruler was to keep 9 of them, only let one of them come back, and that they spent 3 days in jail. They completely omit that. Obviously, trying to deal here with father who is trepidatious at best in regards to his new favorite son, Benjamin, from Joseph, after Joseph's departure. To let him go back with them, which they have to try to convince him to do so. And therefore, they sure don't want to bring anything into the picture that really paints it in a true color that they could all be executed if they don't fulfill the ruler's command. And they simply say that Simeon, in his absence, was left behind, more or less as a guest, to the ruler until their return with Benjamin, even though we know that Joseph, on his own, steam and accord, went in and bound Simeon right before their eyes. So all this is to embellish, twist the story and the events into a type of report that otherwise will not arouse any more suspicion that might otherwise already exist in regards to their father Jacob, to try to meet their goal of returning back with Benjamin. So we're dealing with that in verse 24, is where we're at. Verse 34, excuse me. As they relate the ruler's command to bring their youngest brother to him so that he can validate that they're not for the purpose of espionage or spies, but that they are honest and true men. So they've almost finished their story, point 51, so now is no time to insert trepidation in Jacob's mind any more than might already exist. So 52 in verse 34a, they spring the news they've so dreaded to impart. But bring your youngest brother to me that I may know that you are not spies but honest men. That part is completely true. Wow, boach, ha, kathan, elwa, yada, ki, lo, regel, atim, ki, ken, atim. So 53, now in the final part of verse 34, they end their conversation with outright lies. Again, the whole discoloring of the story is in effect lying, to deceive people into believing something that otherwise is not completely true and open is a lie. Whether you call it a white lie or what, it's still a lie. Lying is a sin. It's a verbal sin. Sin comes in three categories: mental attitude sins. Christ told religious leaders that they lust in their heart. In their heart looks at mental attitude sins. Verbal sins, that's sins of the tongue. Things that we speak. Lying is a sin of the tongue. Amazingly, preachers are the most notorious liars probably walking on this planet. As they lie in regards to what the Bible teaches in regards to others. Not that they are the worst, but either way. So, obviously, there's only one time that one can lie, and that is a righteous lie, if you will, that is acceptable before God. That's in a time of war. Rahab did that to protect others around them, and God blessed her for it. But otherwise, lying is a sin. So you can take it for what it's worth when the country declares war on certain things, whether or not it's legitimate to lie, if you have to. Let you figure that part out. Then there's the overt sins. Gossips, lying, slandering, things of that nature. Overt sins, the obvious sins. Usually sins of the tongue, overt sins, only sins that the most fundies will recognize. Murder. Sexual sins, things of that nature. So they have discolored the scenario, and in effect lying, and the nature of the lies becomes more obvious as they now wind down their discourse with their father. And now at the very end, they outright lie. So in the final part of verse 34, at the end of the conversation with outright lies, I will give your brother to you, and you may trade in the land. Point 53. Achnathan, Lamed, Wauha, Eretz, Sakar. So 54, Joseph did not claim to return Simeon, only that they wouldn't be executed if they did as he commanded. Bring your youngest brother to me, as he stated to them before they left, so your words may be verified, and you will not die. I will not execute you. And then that's where the chronological sequence of the narrative ends. And they did so. And then picks back up in chapter 44. When they return with Benjamin. So, this parenthetical insert that we have here is designed to contrast even subtleties of life to noting that which is wrong and that which is right before God. And we see this contrast in Joseph as well as his brothers and his father. So, the ruler did not say he would return Simeon per se. And they might have assumed it. I'm not going to argue that. But he didn't say that, see. So they don't know. Not until they get back with Benjamin do they know what this guy's going to do. And they know that. As unreasonable as he was, no telling what he might do. But here they go. They got to convince their father of something else. So 55, neither did he promise that they would be allowed free trade in Egypt. In fact, there was not even an insinuation of such. That part is completely and totally fabricated. So 56, the brothers embellish the story in order to mollify any apprehension on Jacob's part with respect to sending Benjamin. However, as good as a story as it might be, for any discerning listener to this story, it does not jive, if that's politically correct to use that, as practical or logical. It's not practical or logical, their story. It doesn't ring true. 58, quote, "Why would this mean ruler, on the one hand, without pretext, indict them as spies, and then on the other hand, extend a hand of friendship to them?" End quote. You say this vile, mean, cruel ruler, accuse you of being spies in a threatening way in that regards. But yet on the other hand of the coin, leave your one brother, you know, I'll put him up while you're gone, collateral, I'll return him to you when you get back with this guy. And when you get back, everything's fine and dandy. That doesn't fit the personality profile of someone that is otherwise they sought to describe to begin with. So it doesn't jive, it doesn't make sense. And that obviously comes from being a good listener to figure these things out. To figure all these things out that we have been over looks at truly listening to what's being said in a very close and scrutinizing, critiquing way. To make sure that there's something there otherwise that's not amiss in regards to speaking simply the truth. So 59, as we see, Jacob has no immediate response to his sons. 60, he obviously is pondering all that really happened to them. That's the picture you're left with here, more or less, with Jacob as he hears this. He hears this story. And he's obviously least exercising wisdom of this part, he's slow to speak on this. He hears it out. But in his mind, I don't know about this. So 61, at most, or least, however you want to term it, the story aroused suspicion in Jacob. It does look suspicious. Two sides of this character. Was he had dual personality, a split personality or something? What? No. 62, in addition, the brothers, for obvious reason, make no mention of finding the silver in one of their bags. They completely omit that thing coming home. The one that they reacted in fear so greatly, they started shaking. Now, that'd be something you might think that in their mind they're thinking that would be important to let their father know this fear that they have of what they think is going on, see. But no, and that's the way it is usually with people of this ilk who have no real bearing of integrity in life. They just want to tell people what they want people to hear. Keep themselves in the best light possible otherwise. And mislead as they are doing it. 63, if time has taught them anything, it is to stay mum about things and no one will ever find out the truth, ? Exclamation mark. Well, we've gotten away with this for 21 years. See, lying to our father. So all you got to do is keep secret about this stuff. And you can throw out your little lies, your misrepresentation, whatever. Just stay silent. Nobody will ever find out. 64, yet, it is this very secret in regards to finding the silver, etc., that God will expose in the most dramatic way, provoking Jacob to turn against his sons, the very thing they tried to avoid. The very thing they're trying to avoid. They already got God and this ruler on their backs over them as enemies. They don't need their father Jacob. We need to keep him on the good side of ourselves. Keep him from being suspicious, etc., etc. We won't tell him about the silver. You sure don't want to tell him about that. Our fear in regards to what's really going on. And it is that very increment of what occurred while the rest of the stuff was in Egypt. How's their dad going to find out about that? Well, the silver's still with them. See. All right, so now we go in and verse 35-38, I've titled, Jacob Unloads on His Sons. It's about damn time. But anyway, let's look at the Hebrew here, our next set of verses. Obviously, it's still not to the extent that's deserving, but at least there's light at the end of the tunnel. You can kind of see in the perspective. So Jacob uncorks here. Verse 35. Now it came about as they were emptying their sacks that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. Wow, consecutive. Came about as your cow in perfect third masculine singular verb, Hayah, H-A-Y-A-H. They themselves, as they, is the pronoun third masculine plural, him, H-E-M. Intensive, they themselves, H-E-M. We're emptying. Emptying out is your hip-fill participle masculine plural verb, absolute, reek, R-I-Y-Q. To empty out. There are sacks, the common masculine plural construct with the third masculine plural suffix, the transliteration in our very English, sack, S-A-Q. Obviously, this the sackcloth of which they store the grain in. And within that, we know that there is another smaller pouch or sack that was integral part of it that they would keep their personal belongings in. But anyway, we've been through that. That behold, you have the wow conjunction followed with the interjectory particle henna, H-I-N-N-E-H. Every man's bundle of money. Every man or each man is a common masculine singular absolute ish. I-S-H, bundle is your common masculine singular construct noun tesseror, T-S-E-R-O-R, a pouch or a bundle of, inferring obviously the compartment that it was kept in. Money is literally our word for silver, common masculine singular construct, or masculine singular suffix kesef. K-E-S-E-P-H, in his sack, preposition bet, and then our noun for sack again, S-A-Q, common masculine singular construct, third masculine singular suffix. And their father was present when all this occurred. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were dismayed, as to put it lightly. Wow, consecutive. Follow with our verb first to see, cow, and perfect third masculine plural, ra'ah, R-A-A-H. When they saw, sign of direct object, the bundles of, common masculine plural construct, tesseror, again, T-S-E-O-R-O-R, silver, money, common masculine plural construct, third masculine plural suffix, kesef, K-E-S-E-P-H. Plus the pronoun him, they themselves, wow conjunction, and their father, common masculine singular constructor, masculine plural suffix of, they themselves and their father, A-B, of. Our word dismayed is actually fear. as wow, consecutive, cow, imperfect third masculine plural, yara, y-a-r-a. They all feared. Verse 36. And their father Jacob said to them, "You have bereaved me of my children." Wow, consecutive, cow, imperfect third masculine singular, amar, to say, A-N-A-R. And he said to them, preposition L, third masculine plural, suffix E-L, proper noun Jacob, their father, common masculine singular, construct third masculine plural, suffix of, A-B. Literally, me, you have made childless. You have assigned a direct object with the first common singular suffix et, and then to me, have been made childless, or to bereave a children, if you will, as it's translated, is a PL, perfect verb, second masculine plural, shakal, S-H-K-A-L. You all have made childless. Joseph is no more, and Simeon is no more, and you would take Benjamin. Proper noun Joseph, followed with the adverb, third masculine singular, A-Y-I-N, no more is he, literally translation. Simeon, same construct, followed with the adverb, I-N, Simeon, no more is he. Wow conjunction, proper noun Benjamin, you would take. A verb to take is a cow in perfect third, second masculine plural, lakach, L-A-Q-A-C-H. All these things are against me. You have the preposition all with the first common singular suffix, A-L, against me. They had become literally cow perfect third masculine plural, verb hayah, H-A-Y-A-H. All these things. Common masculine singular construct, third feminine plural suffix, kol, K-O-L. So Reuben's going to make this all better. Yeah, okay. Then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, wow, consecutive, and he said, our cow and perfect third masculine singular verb, amar, A-M-A-R, Reuben, proper noun, to his father, preposition L, E-L, followed with our noun, father, of, third masculine singular suffix, his father, A-B, saying is your preposition lamed with count infinity, construct amar, A-M-A-R. You may put my two sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Well, that's a real loving father. Kill my kids. Maybe he wants them to. I don't know. But you go, what? You have to sign a direct object. Then our number two is the adjective masculine dual construct, shenayim, S-H-E-N-A-Y-I-M. Two of my sons. Sons is your common masculine plural. Construct first common singular suffix ben. My sons, you may kill or put to death. This is the hifil, imperfect, second masculine singular of the verb muth, M-U-T-H. If I do not bring him back to you, you have the conjunction M, if I am, followed with the negative particle lo, and the hifil, imperfect verb, first common singular, third masculine singular, suffix bo. B-O, I do not cause to bring him to you. Preposition L with the second masculine singular suffix, E-L. Put him in my care. Put is your cow imperative. Masculine singular, our verb to give. Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N. Sign a direct object. To give who? Him. You hit the third masculine singular suffix with the direct object. In my care is your preposition all, A-L, followed with the common feminine singular construct. First common singular suffix, our word for hand, yad, Y-A-D. Upon my hand, in my care, idiomatic for control, if you will. And I will return him to you in his control. You have the pronoun, first common singular, ani, and I myself, emphatic, A-N-I-Y, will return, cause to return him is the hifil, imperfect, first common singular verb with the third masculine singular suffix, shuv, S-H-U-B, to you, preposition L, second masculine singular suffix, E-L. Verse 28. But Jacob said, my son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead and he alone is left. While consecutive, a verb to say, amar, cal perfect, third masculine singular, A-M-A-R, negative particle low, L-O, followed with our verb to go down or descend, cal imperfect, third masculine singular, yarad, Y-A-R-A-D. He will not go down. Who his son, common masculine singular struck, first common singular suffix, my son, B-E-N. With you is your preposition M, I-M, with the second masculine plural suffix. The reason why or for, because, conjunction key, K-I-Y. His brother, common masculine singular construct, third masculine singular suffix, ach, A-C-H, a noun for brother, has died, cal perfect, third masculine singular, our verb, muth again, M-U-T-H. While conjunction, follow the pronoun who, third masculine singular, H-U, and he himself, then alone is left. You have the preposition lamed, plus the common masculine singular construct noun with the third masculine singular suffix bad, B-A-D, literally means two apart, a section apart, hence alone. Followed with the nifil participle masculine singular absolute verb sha'ar, being left, remains. Alone, in part he remains, that is your literal, alone hence is your idea, S-H-A-A-R. If harm should befall him on the journey you are taken, then you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow. Typical Jacob now. While consecutive, followed with a cal perfect third matching singer. Cal perfect third matching singer with the third matching singer suffix, kara, Q-A-R-A. When it would befall him, literal translation. Here, evil or harm is a common masculine singular noun, ason, A-S-O-N. On the journey, on the way, on the road, preposition bet, definite article, common both singular noun, absolute, Derek, Haderek, H-A-D-E-R-E-K. Followed with the relative pronoun, asher, A-S-H-R-A-S-E, man, I can't even spell, A-S-H-E-R. It all looks Greek to me, but anyway. You are taking is a cal imperfect second masculine plural, halak, H-A-L-A-K, to walk, literally take. On it is a preposition bet with a third feminine singular suffix, B-E-T. Then you will bring my gray hair down to shale and sorrow. You have the wow consecutive. Follow with first our verb to go down. The hifil, perfect, second masculine plural verb, yarad again, Y-A-R-A-D. Go down, bring down to sign a direct object. What's being brought down is his gray hair. Obviously, this is idiomatic, a Hebrewism. Common feminine singular construct, first common singular suffix, sebah, S-E-Y-B-A-H. Bring it down in the state of sorrow or grief, preposition bet. Followed with the common masculine singular absolute, yagon, Y-A-G-O-N. And then our noun for shale is a common both singular absolute, transliterated shale, S-H-E-O-L. Shale is the proper name of the compartment that's located in the center of our earth, because it always goes down from your perspective of being on the surface. And obviously, we're in a sphere. If it is flat, no telling where it's at, but anyway. And shale is where all believers went in Old Testament times. There was a transition of location after Christ's resurrection. But in Sheol, there are actually three compartments, but two primary compartments. There's Sheol Hades. That's where all unbelievers go. Unbelievers still go there. Their souls, that's where the souls are boxed up in there. Then Paradise is where the believers' souls went until Christ took captives. And all souls now, believers, go to the third heaven. That's because the reality has come. Christ broke the barrier between earth and heaven, and believers' souls now go to the third heaven. The third compartment is one called Tartarus. That's a special compartment in the deepest recesses of Sheol Hades that the demons that were associated with the sexual infiltration of the human race in the pre-Noahic, pre-flood, pre-diluvian times that Genesis records, they have been incarcerated for the period of human history up until a few years from now. They're going to be released for a temporary amount of time to bring hell on people on this planet. Think COVID's bad. You'll wish you'd be able to die when these demons get a hold of you. And you won't be able to. So, there you have it. All right. Rereading the verses. Verses 35 through 38. Now it came about as they were emptying their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of silver or money was in his sack. And when they and their father saw their bundles of money, they were dismayed. They were feared in anger or feared in this regards. Not anger, feared. Verse 36, and their father Jacob said to them, "You have bereaved me of my children. Joseph no more and Simeon is no more, and you would take Benjamin. All these things are against me." Verse 37, then Reuben spoke to his father, saying, "You can put my two sons to death if I do not bring him back to you. Put him in my care, and I will return him to you." Verse 38, Jacob responded, or said, "My son shall not go down with you, for his brother is dead, and he alone is left. If harm should befall him on the path or on the journey you are taking, then you will bring down you will bring my gray hair down to Sheol in sorrow." All right. Get going on the analysis of verses 35 through 38. One, what appears as if the brothers at least had not aroused an adverse reaction from their father, recounting the events of their trip, is just that, in appearance. He remained silent after telling the story. In their minds, it probably, well, that's a good thing. He hasn't reacted to a typical Jacob fashion. But he's getting ready to. So sometimes things are not as they may physically appear to you. But it's a real reality. You can't see what's inside the souls of individuals. Somebody can be extended their hand with a big smile, showing all their teeth on their face, embracing you, and in their mind, they could be killing you. See. So, what appears here, this situation, as if maybe their story is going to fly here with their father Jacob, it's just that, it's just an appearance. The reality is something different. So, two, whatever smug thoughts present in their minds and pulling another fast one on their father, if such thoughts existed, is quickly shattered. I only put that in because that seems to be the demeanor of these guys. We're getting away with it again. Quote, continuing point two, when it came about as they were emptying their sacks, that behold, every man's bundle of money was in his sack. While Hayahim, Rik Sakwa, Hina, Ish Tisaror, Kesef, Bet Sak. Verse 35. Some more critique here, that the brothers had not been even inquisitive enough when the first sack of money was found, and back in verse 27-28, on their trip down, on their overnight stay, when the one brother went to feed his donkey the fodder, and he found the money in his sack. So that the brothers had not been even inquisitive enough when the first sack of money was found to check the other bags is enough to make the reader ask, quote, just how dull-minded were these guys, end quote. If I was with nine other guys or eight other guys and came back on a trip and one of them, well, man, I got my silver's in my bag. I'd be checking my bag immediately. Really? We got our money back? Of course, that's just me. Maybe. But you go, I mean, really, they do not have truly the ability to critique a situation accurately. They are dull. So, and of course, they didn't even ask about the food. And that was another thing that we brought out. Joseph gave them food for their trip. Why would he do that? Why would this mean, harsh ruler who is threatening to kill us give us food for our trip without paying for it? Oh, in fact, look, I got my money back. Well, that's what happens when you're in never-never land under your sin nature and your emotions. When things do happen, you are basically out of touch with reality in that state. And you do not think clearly. So for, as the narrative has pointed out, when the believer is running through life disregarding doctrine, that's what started this whole mess, led by their emotions, constantly under fear, mysticism, oh, God's on our backs now, He's out to get us, and STA fear, they fail miserably in critical thought, critical thinking. A part of the education system that has been essentially stripped in regards to what is taught children. What is critical thinking? It's to take a situation and to analyze it. Here's an engine. Look at it. See how it works. Do you see anything problems with it? Do you see anything you can make better in it? Blah, blah, blah. To tear it down. To look at it critically. And to think for yourself. This builds up brain power. Basically, what you see now, and obviously not every school is like this, but in the general public education system, we're going to develop Gumbies. This is the way you think. This is how you're supposed to think. And don't question it. It's just right. I don't even have the audacity to do that as a pastor. But that's our education system. That's what the world wants. That's what Satan wants. Is people that are not free thinkers, who are not critical in regards to analyzing and looking at things. Why I constantly say, do your research in regards to circumstances and situations of life and things that are going around. To see, does this make sense? Is there something amiss here? Is it logical? Are there gaps? Is it consistent? Is there any hypocrisy? All these things. See. It looks like at this point in time, that's exactly what they're trying to do now to the military. They don't want free thinkers in the military. They don't want people with testosterone, men with testosterone, and able to make judgments for themselves. So that's why you give them all a dishonorable discharge if they don't get the vaccine. They want Gumbies. You know, this all started back when they started implementing foreign troops into our American military. Why is that? Because these people are detached in regards to any emotional embracing in regards to the normal U.S. citizen. It's not your family. It's not your brothers, see. And they want people in there now. And obviously, all this is prelude in regards to what's going to truly explode in this world in regards to militaries in all nations, and especially that under the Antichrist. How do I come to that epinosis? Through critical thinking. And the critical thought comes through doctrine, see. The doctrine, I know the prophecy, I know what's around the corner, what's on the horizon, and you put two and two together, guess what? It does equal four. See. You put a male phallus on one person and a female phallus on another person, and you have a male and a female. Guess what? What are you? I'm a they. They are them. Yeah. And he's a she. And she is shit or whatever. I mean, I'm trying to put it together there, sorry. You know. What is this? Unfortunately, it's so sad, it's hard to be funny. I understand that. But yet, with doctrine, you look at it. And you go, wow. That's what happens. When mankind starts rejecting the truth of God, rejecting God, whatever you want to call the crisis that's upon people in regards to people's health and things of this nature, one thing you can take to the bank is God's wrath. Whether, and I recognize men are behind it, and under his permissive will, he allows them to maybe manipulate or create certain things in order to express his wrath. So, that's where we're at. The dullness of people. You know, how can people fall for all the shenanigans that's going on? Socialism, Marxism, fascism, everything that obviously my generation was brought up to believe was wrong and not good for government are the very principles that are being rammed down people's throats now in our society, in our government. So what are we supposed to do with it? Use critical thinking, be discerning, obey the law, but be wise as a serpent, peaceful as a dove. See. Keep your nose to the grindstone in regards to doctrine. And don't let the prayer of Maranatha to ever fade from your lips, even more so as the day approaches. Maranatha means Lord return. That's a prayer. Lord return. Bring it on. See. Right after I get my new Mercedes. Okay, we'll throw it in. Ask your STA. It gets in there sometimes. No, I'm not going to go get a Mercedes. Now, don't. Yes, I know I'm an open book, but don't take me wrong there. I don't think I am, but anyway. So as the narrative has pointed out, when the believer is running through life disregarding doctrine, led by their emotions, emotions are responders. That's not how you're supposed to think. You're supposed to think with your mind, clear-headed, to be logical and concise, almost academic in regards to how you approach things, not how you feel. It's what's right, what's wrong, what's doctrine, what's your STA, what's right application, wrong application, see. Mysticism, the good luck, bad luck syndrome that people run under. God's in control of all circumstances, situations. Their mysticism subtly was brought out in regards to Joseph when he bound Simeon. He knew their conversation. We brought this out. He knew their conversation. They felt guilty after his proclamation of fearing God and preservation of life for their misdeeds regard to Joseph. And Joseph took advantage of that and bound Simeon before their eyes. Joseph knew who was the instigator in regards to trying to kill him. And that appealed to their mysticism. Religious people are mystics. Now, we believe in the supernatural. We believe in miracles. I wrote a song about that. Why do these songs run through my head when I'm here teaching? I believe in miracles. But anyway. But we're not mystic about it. We believe it because Bible doctrine tells us this is what's going to happen. See? STA fear. Fear is a very close race, if not the dominant STA trend that envelops the entire human race in some area of their life. Just because someone's not afraid to die, obviously a lot of these people that go out here and do all this crazy stuff like the evil Knievel types and things of that nature. The adrenaline junkies. They have fears in other areas of their life. What people will think about them. Things of this nature, see. Anyway, they fail miserably in critical thought. 5, doctrine leverages one to rise above the mind-numbing herd mentality. Characterizing the negative world by evaluating all that occurs as to its doctrinal and logical conclusion. That's why we are here in Bible class fastidiously, week in, week out, year in, year out, verse by verse, assimilating the truth of Bible doctrine so that we can escape the groggy cloudiness of existence in their mystical, created in their own eyes world, and see the reality. That's what we see. We see the reality. The reality of what's going on in our world right now. So it builds up your good conscience. We've dealt with this, that part in the passage, that example. But it also builds up your wisdom, your discernment, and your ability to think. 6, doctrine teaches you to problem solve life. Life is an open book test. And we are learning the answers to it. See. And all the other contingencies that we may face are brought out for us here in the Old Testament, especially as examples. See. We can see the difference between Joseph and his brothers and his dad. This is quite a remarkable example and contrast of positive volition, even between two positive believers, Joseph and Jacob, and the difference it made in their life, and their lifestyle, and their attitude towards life. Father, again, thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God the Holy Spirit to continue to analyze these things in Jesus' name. Amen.